Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I thought I'd just open again this morning by just telling you a nice comment I got from actually someone not in the United States, but actually from Canada. It says, "Dear JBL, I work with adults and developmental disabilities and have been looking for something else to read in our reading program. I think I've finally found what I need. We will be starting with The Old Man and the Sea next week. Thank you again." And that is from Edmonton, Alberta. So it's always good to get those comments. And again, listeners, please let me know what you're thinking. And also, I'm really curious to see if anyone is getting together in groups. That is the idea behind JBL, is to not only get you to read good literature, but to get together and have conversations with people. I want to start today with a quote from Ben Franklin's autobiography. And it's just going to be a short quote. But if you're using the Dover edition, it's page 9. If you're using the Norton Critical edition, it's page 17. And it's a very important quote. And it's certainly in the spirit of JBL. It says, this is a quote from Ben. He is writing about himself. He says, "From a child, I was fond of reading. And all the little money that came into my hands was ever laid out in books. Pleased with Pilgrim's Progress, my first collection was of John Bunyan's works in separate little volumes. I afterwards sold them to enable me to buy R. Burton's historical collections. They were small Chapman's books and cheap, 40 or 50 in all." And so we have to remember that now Ben is obviously, he's about 65 when he's writing this, but when he actually did this, he was 12 years old. And so I can't imagine many 12-year-olds today that would be so interested in books that they spend their money on books, and then once they read their books, they resell them to buy more books. I mean, I have grandsons that are 12, and they would probably do that with Legos, not necessarily with books. But what I want to do today on today's program is we're going to begin our discussion of Ben Franklin's autobiography. And we do have our first panel here in the studio with us. But what we're going to focus on is Ben Franklin's, what I consider, amazing early education. Now, if you have your book, get it out, grab a pencil, be ready to take some notes, and you can do that right in your book. I firmly believe that that's what books are for. You write in the margins or wherever, get your notes in there. But I'm really happy to have in the studio with me today Mr. James Brandon, who has been with us here before. I think he's becoming a familiar voice with us. And just in case you forgot, James is instructor of English literature and Shakespeare at our Imperial Academy, and he does work in the middle school and high school area. And I also have with me today Brandon Nice, who is the assistant to our IA principal. And he also teaches English literature and Shakespeare, but at the high school level. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So you, I know you both have, taught this book and worked on this book. And so let's get at it. What do you think of Ben Franklin's early education? First one that opens their mouth gets the mic.
I will open my mouth first.
All right. This is Brandon Nice now, not James Brandon. We have two Brandon names, so we don't want to confuse anybody. One is Brandon Nice, and the other one's James Brandon. So we're now talking with Mr. Nice.
Thank you, Mr. Leap. And I think that his early education was phenomenal because, like you said, he doesn't really remember learning to read. His father tried to get him into the priesthood, basically. And then he dropped out and basically took control of his own education after that, just by his love of reading. I mean, it's an amazing thing for a young man like you said, 12 years old, probably even younger, when he discovered how much he loved reading, to really latch on to the importance of knowledge. And at the time, that's all there was books. I mean, he couldn't look anything up on the internet. There was no radio or anything like that, TV, no documentary videos to learn from. And so he saw where the knowledge was, and he went after it. And that was a self-made education. He didn't go to Oxford or Harvard, which he talks about a little later.
He does.
But he, I mean, and we kind of even see that, just to draw the common analogy here that we use with Mr. Armstrong, kind of making his own education. But Ben Franklin started so early and put such a high value on it, and his father did too. And I think that's important, even though he wasn't quite as schooled as Ben would become. And I think, right, Ben obviously outstripped him in that as, right, his life went on.
Yeah, well, that is, I think it is very important. I think one of the things that we want, certainly the listeners to remember, is remember that Ben came from a huge family. I mean, his father had been married twice. His first wife was Anne Child. You know, she gave birth to seven children, and then she died once they moved to the United States, or I should say to the colonies at that time. And then he married Abiah Folger, and then they had 10 children together. And so Ben was number 8 of those 10. And it is interesting, you mentioned that his father actually pulled him out of grammar school. And of course, it was economics that really made him pull out. And if you have 17 children and you're a candle maker, I'm sure that's a lot of mouths to feed. And I know that Ben, he makes the comment in the book that, well, he remembers being around the dinner table with 13 other children, or 13 children total. So his father did have him in it was called the Boston Latin School in Boston. And I think it is interesting, H.W. Brands does say in his biography that he quickly went from the head of the class and then was promoted midterm to the next class. And so I think it really brings... Mr. Nice is, or Brandon is, we can be on a first name basis in here. Brandon is bringing out a good point that obviously his father and his mother were really educating these children early, because he didn't even enter grammar school to age 8. And then in the first year, he went to the second grade immediately, like within one term. So there was obviously a lot of home education going on. And I think if we look at Josiah and the way he was respected in the community, and Josiah was his father, I think he was a lot like Mr. Herbert Armstrong as well. He's probably a self-educated person. And as we get through this today, I think we'll see that even more.
Yeah, I think to me, one of the things that stands out to me is just, like you said, he didn't go to grammar school till he was 8, yet he was obviously ahead of the level that he entered at, because he very quickly moved up. Where was he learning from? And I think you both alluded to it. He was learning at home. And his father, like you said, was very well respected in the community. A lot of what Benjamin Franklin picked up on at a young age was not even so much language or grammar. He was analyzing the logic and arguments of things, even at a young age. He was reading books, he was talking with friends, and he was thinking about logic and arguments. And I think that foundation came from watching his father. His father was a respected man in the community. People came to him for advice, even though he was just a candle maker. They respected his opinion. He was clearly a well-thought-out, rational man. And Benjamin Franklin, you know, would have observed that. Just, you know, like he said, sitting around the dinner table, there was always good conversation. They never focused on the meal, he said. It was amuses me, because he said he could never remember what he ate. Nobody ever paid attention to the meal. It was just sustenance. They were there to talk. And I think probably as a child, he would have been there listening to his father talking with these men from the community, taking in these things. So he's probably just subconsciously learning structure of arguments and things like that, or how to speak and how to talk. And that obviously helps writing a lot.
You know, I think that brings out a point, James, that Mr. Stephen Fleury has been trying to cover some of these things on the Trumpet Daily about family and about, you know, education. And how many families today actually get together for a meal and have conversation? I mean, we did it as children. I know that I remember sitting around the table with Let's see, my older sister was already gone, but I remember sitting around the table with seven of us and us having discussions. And so I know we try to do that with our family. But how many families today do you even catch at home together at the dinner hour? It's just not a reality. But I think it is interesting that Ben does bring up about his father, that he looked for subjects to have conversations with his children. And so I mean, that's really kind of a rare thing to do today. And so I do think that it just goes to show that the family is the foundation of education.
Definitely. I completely agree. I think the respect that he had for his dad would grow because of that. And because his dad was so respected, he looked up to his dad and those men that he conversed with, even if they were leaders in the community, and they would come to this candle maker for advice because his dad was an intelligent man that also appears to be very moral. He talks about being his dad told him that there was nothing that was useful that wasn't honest when he stole a bunch of stones to build a wharf for himself. I think his dad's influence was fascinating, and I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, but when he starts riding back and forth with his friend, and his dad gets a hold, they were arguing about, and we'll probably talk about this a lot more, with the women and their right to education, or should they be educated, and Ben is going back and forth with his friend Collins, and his dad gets a hold of the papers, and most of us think, okay, this is an old moral guy, kind of, you know, his dad would have been a very set in his ways kind of fellow. And so he's going to get on Ben for arguing about women being educated. And his dad doesn't even touch the actual subject matter. He just says, Ben, you're not a very good debater. And then he starts pointing out all the areas where Ben should be better at expressing himself. And now, once again, take it to modern times. How, like, your dad comes to you and says, listen, you don't speak well, or you don't. Well, there's quite a bit of rebelliousness where I think a lot of people would just disregard that, you know, a teenager, and especially he was still a teenager at the time. And now but he took it, and he really took his dad's instruction on that it's important to be able to express your points clearly. You can be so smart, and Ben was, you know, just, and not get it across to people, and it doesn't matter because you can't express yourself. And so Ben took to writing and trying to improve his writing very, very seriously from that point on, and really made a difference in this nation in the end, that skill he developed at a very young age. But I think the respect for his father that he had, I mean, just started the foundation there really early. He saw his dad being respected, and then he wanted to impress him and follow that advice.
I think that's really true. One thing is, I think, is maybe not readily apparent when you read the autobiography, and Ben really did, we tried to bring this out in the first couple of programs. He always referred to himself as Ben Franklin, comma, printer. I mean, here he is, one of the greatest statesmen in the world at the time. I mean, if you think about it, he's writing this at 65, so the Revolutionary War was already over. You know, the country had already been established. You know, he lived for another 20 years, and we know he went on and was this great ambassador to France, and France really did support the United States as a nation, one of the first countries to really support us. And so here, you know, he's going through all of this, but he still only considered himself Ben Franklin, printer. And it's this artisan class of people that he loved to be around. He'd like to be around the cutlery maker. He'd like to be around the candle maker. He'd like to be around the printers. And the thing is society at that time was so different. And, you know, I think we could correspond it with the blue-collar workers today. Well, they were an educated class of people. You know, they weren't dummies. And even though his father, you know, his father was originally a dyer, and he dyed cloth, then he became a candle maker because when he came to the States, there was too many dyers or cloth dyers, and so he went into candle making. But when the people came to him, they were coming to him not only for personal advice, it's like they were coming to him for legal advice. And, you know, he was a really part of the Puritan moral society, which is a legal society. And so today, and I don't want to be critical of blue collar workers, but in the blue collar class, how many of them are out educating themselves as well? Now I know there's a portion of them that do or consider themselves, you know, very well educated. I know there are very well educated people that are in, you know, construction, and they build houses, and they, you know, they throw cement, and they do, you know, the things like that. But when you look at the general populace, what do they mostly talk about? Well, where they're going to get their next beer? When's the next game? Or when, you know, what's the next event that we can go to? So again, understand, listeners, I'm not trying to criticize anybody, but look at the difference in society, and it's a big difference. But that's a society we need to get back to. Everybody needs to be educated. You don't need to necessarily go to college to be educated. And that to me is a myth that's being supported today. You know, I was able to go to grade school. I went to college prep school. I went to college. I got a master's degree. But I have to be honest, I've gotten most of my education since then.
Yeah.
So I think this book is like a microscope, and it lets us look into society that built this nation the way it is. And so many people want to make America great again today. You hear that. Of course, we hear that a lot now. It's not about money. It's about education. It's about, you know, getting back to those right values. So, okay, I don't want to keep waxing eloquent.
Well, I like the point that you brought out about education doesn't just mean a college education. Because, like you were talking about, I think socially in our culture, there's a division, like you alluded to, between we are blue-collar workers and we are college-educated people. Like, you know, we're the infrastructure people and we're the thinkers. Like, those are two separate paths in life. Like, those are, you choose one or you choose the other. There's a fork in the road at some point in your life, and you decide, I'm going to go be a laborer, or I'm going to go to college and educate myself and you know, sit at a desk or whatever it might be. But they're not mutually exclusive. You can be, like, with the example of Josiah Franklin, you be a thinker and a laborer. And I think maybe, you know, the laborers, like you said, Benjamin Franklin liked to hang out with the artisanal class. They were laborers. They made cutlery, they made candles, whatever it might have been. They worked with their hands, but they were very educated people. And one difference, I think, is they really took a pride in their work. They were careful people. They were deliberate people.
Right. Exactly.
They cared deeply about the culture of the work that they were in. It was work that was passed on to other generations. You know, even the whole idea of apprenticeships, like, I have a skill. You're going to come work for me for 7 years. I'm going to teach you this skill, you know, and we're going to do this because society needs people like us. And there was a real need and an appreciation there, but it wasn't a separate life path from being educated. You know, it's not like, oh, well, you know, you're going to come work for me. We're not educated people. You know, there wasn't a separate choice in life.
But I think the thing that Ben, he kind of illustrates, and we'll compare him with Paul Revere. Okay, because Paul Revere was a silversmith, so he was an artisan. And, of course, you know, at IA, we do work with the fictional book, Johnny Tremaine, but that's all about the same period of time. But it's like they're artisans, and they're working at their craft. But they're into ideas. They're into reading. I mean, reading was a big thing for everybody back at the time of Ben Franklin, because there were so many ideas. There was, you know, they were forming these new, what are now American values. And we talked a lot about, you know, the freedom of speech in the last taping. Now, people, you haven't heard that yet. But these were ideas on people's minds. And people read their newspapers, and people looked for getting books from England. And printing in America really took off, and the printing of books. And people wanted their own libraries. So it really is kind of interesting, but let's get back to the point of Ben. And the thing I just want to bring out here is, remember, we're talking about a 12-year-old. We're not talking about a 19-year-old. We're not talking about a 25-year-old. We're talking about a 12-year-old boy who actually loves swimming. He loves the sea. He loves the ocean. He actually wants to go to sea and be a sailor. And, you know, his father is, like, frantic, not wanting him to go because his older son is already gone. And I think when Ben was 9, they found out that his, you know, his ocean-going vessel went down to sea, so he was dead. So, you know, his father did not want him to go to sea. But what he found out is he loved books so much, so that's when he took him to James, the brother, and said, look, I think you'd make a great printer. And but that's not really the big story. The big story is what did he do when he became a printer?
I think that when you say, you know, he defined himself as a printer, we might think of it a little bit more as he was a typesetter, which I don't think that's how Ben Franklin interpreted the job of a printer. I think Ben, as you see throughout, even when he goes to England and comes back, a printer was an influential person. It was basically a gatekeeper of ideas. I mean, if you own the press, then you got to promote ideas. And from what you've said, you covered a little bit of that in your last one with the Mather.
I think that's a very
issue.
Good point, Brandon, to bring that out. That's a very good point to bring out. Go ahead.
So he didn't just set the type. He set his own type oftentimes, or the type of people that he agreed with, you know, and promoted these ideas through his printing. And even with the Silence Do-Good stuff, you know, he had an in with the printer already, and so he knew, you know, he could slip it under the door or whatever he needed to do in order to get those ideas out in public. And I think that's how Ben looked at it. It wasn't, I set the type and make it look good. He was saying, I run a paper, I influence ideas, I get ideas out there into the public, and people, you know, if I'm right, if I put it right in my words and then on the paper, then people can agree with it, and society can move forward. He did that with the paper money issue later on in his life, but I feel like that's probably how he defined himself and why he kept that title in spite of influencing the birth of a nation and being well traveled and being an inventor of all sorts of different things, as we'll see later on in his life. But I think that's probably the biggest part of his self definition.
Yeah, I think that's very good to bring out. Let's go back and just because this is covered in the autobiography so well, let's go back and, of course, you know, being a typesetter, I think that's really, really key. There is a real art to that. There's a real creativity to it. And, of course, we talked about this before, that they found out very early on that not only did he have the physique to do it, because it took a lot of strength to, you know, to carry these, you know, the typeset, the iron, it's made out of iron, so it's heavy, and to set it all up. But let's go back a little bit, and I think this is, again, what makes it so amazing, is this is a 12-year-old. Let's go back to the thing with John Collins, and let's go back to what these young boys are actually doing with each other, and then, you know, to see how much effort he put into himself to become a writer. And so I'll let you guys take over, and we'll let James take over.
I just think it's incredible. For one, think about this, because we talk about Benjamin Franklin. Okay, look at these great qualities. It wasn't just him. He had a friend, you know, John Collins. It's not like Benjamin Franklin was not debating with himself. He had a friend. It was like, that's what they did. Hey, friend, let's debate about some moral issue. Yeah. Hey, should women be educated? That's not the sort of thing that 12-year-olds today talk about, like you said. I mean, they're not, most of them aren't even trying to buy books. They're buying Legos, let alone having...
I'm sure it's even worse than Legos.
Right. Yeah, not let alone having a moral debate on, you know, the education or the disenfranchisement of certain sectors of society. So it was not just him. Like, I would say in some areas he was anomalous for his time. But in general, there was this expectation that kids grew up faster than they do today. So it wasn't even like his dad saw these arguments and thought, wow, my son's very intelligent. Like, look at him. He's a 12-year-old. I can't believe he's having these sorts of discussions. I mean, he felt comfortable enough to just sort of basically lay into his son. Like, look at this terrible writing. You're not going to convince anybody with that.
So what James is talking about is that John Collins. Now there had been another little group too. They were they were into poetry. Now, I might be getting the timing mixed up, but there may have been a later time. But anyway, this friend John Collins, John was really into debating, and he was really into writing. And so they did come up with this. They wanted to figure out, well, should the female sex be as educated as men? And so they never could resolve it together, and then John moved away, and they were started to do this by letter. And then it just so happened one day, as a good father, you know, finding out where all these letters are coming from, he gets Ben's letters and he starts reading them. And as Brandon Nice already brought up, his father got the letters, didn't question the fact that they were talking about something absolutely extraordinarily never discussed in the 18th century. You know, should females be, you know, trained as equal to men? I mean, that was just phenomenal for the 18th century, you know, and it was still kind of phenomenal in the 50s, because I know that, I had two sisters that went on to college, and that was like, what? You're going to college, you know? And then, of course, then I wanted to go to college, and my father, he supported, you know, seven of us. We were well fed. We had clothes. You know, we had nice clothes. We had a warm house. He worked on the railroad. Like Josiah Franklin, he decided I was going on the railroad. Well, I actually liked writing and poetry, and I wanted to go to college. You know, so it didn't. I think eventually they came around to it when I got a really good job with Westinghouse Electric Corporation. Even that corporation is defunct today. Most people don't even know what that is, but and I did make my way with writing even at that time. So, but it is kind of interesting that his dad says your writing stinks, Ben. You know, it just doesn't have any polish. Hey, fellas, sorry. Let me interrupt this right now because we're out of time. So, all your listeners, you're going to have to be patient now for us to finish our discussion next time. So remember, if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at jbl@pcog.org, or you can follow JBL on Twitter, and that address is at jbliterature1. Now remember, the next book we're going to be reading is Shakespeare's play Hamlet. Make sure you get the Pelican edition. And thanks for joining me today, and until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.